Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the ruling of Uganda's Supreme Court on the recent election and what it means for the country's democracy. And with us tonight is Mr. Nicholas Opiyo. Mr. Opiyo is a Kampala human rights lawyer and a political analyst. Welcome to the program, Mr. Opiyo.
Thank you very much, and good evening to all your listeners.
Thank you. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst based in Durban. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening to all your listeners. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for joining us. As I said, today in Uganda, the Supreme Court, by unanimous decision, dismissed a petition by former independent candidate Amama Mbabazi that sought to nullify President Museveni's re-election. Let me start in Kampala with Nicholas. First of all, your general reaction to this ruling.
Well, my reaction to this ruling is what many Ugandans are expressing here in Kampala and around the country, is that nobody is surprised, really, that the court upheld the election of President Yoweri Museveni for a fifth term in office. Everybody expected this to happen because of several reasons. Among others is the lack of trust in the judicial process to overturn an election petition of this nature. So I'm not surprised, like many Ugandans, was expecting this kind of ruling. So everybody really, nobody is celebrating and nobody is sad because this was really expected of the Supreme Court here in Uganda.
I see. Suleiman, do you share that thinking?
Precisely so, Douglas, because actually even the judges took long, because what happened is a replica of what has been happening. Nothing has changed on the ground. Everything has been the same from 1996, the election. The factors which led to the election to be disputed are still the same. In 1996, 2001, 26, 2011, up to 2016. Actually, to put it more clearly, according to one of the candidates, he was not even interested in participating in the election without changing the conditions on the ground. So nothing was unexpected. Everything was expected. That is how it was. The question of going to court was just a formality to allow lawyers to make money, because now Uganda politics is about making a living and making money. So they were just sharing that little bit which was remaining from the campaigns.
I see. Nicholas, what would you say to some people? Some analysts who have said the breakdown of institutions, where some people associate the police to be partisan. The parliament is controlled by the ruling party, and now the judiciary, President Museveni is on record having said that he wanted their cadre judges. Does this sort of consolidate that kind of thinking?
I think that what the ruling of the court represents is a bigger political crisis in Uganda, that you have a political system that is hugely unfair, that is hugely in favor of a sitting head of state who has been in power for the last 30 years. But for me, more fundamentally also, what this ruling represents is that the legal process in Uganda, because of structural problems, because of the human resource problems in the judiciary, because of lack of independence, is unable to provide the safety valve that a Supreme Court should provide in matters such as an election petition. The Supreme Court has demonstrated that it is severely incapable, it is handicapped, because in terms of scope and in terms of time required to determine a matter such as this, the court is just unable to do so. So the court has just reaffirmed the fact that the court has abdicated from its duty to be the neutral arbiter in an electoral contestation. So the court has left a bigger political question in this country unresolved, and that question now has to be resolved by the people of this country, not in the court process. And these problems are an electoral system that is completely biased, an electoral system that is run by a commission that has been declared by the court itself as incompetent, grossly incompetent and inefficient, an electoral system that is skewed towards an individual. President Museveni only organizes elections in Uganda because he knows he can win it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that is a bigger question that Ugandans have to determine. The second thing that Ugandans have to determine is a bigger question of the reform, not just of electoral laws, but the electoral system, so that electoral systems are able to deliver results that represent the wider will of the people of this country. As it is now, it does not.
Yeah, but Nicholas, sticking with the Supreme Court's decision today, this is the court that says faults the Electoral Commission and charges for being gross, incompetent and inefficient, and talks about the failure of the commission to deliver voting materials in time, and then says that there are cases of non-compliance, and then in the same breath says the president was validly elected. How do you reconcile those contradictions?
Well, what the court has done is to maintain a standard that was set by the court in the last two election petitions, the one of 2001 and the one of 2006. That standard is that essentially you are allowed to break the law. Essentially, you are allowed to flout electoral rules, provided that flouting, that those violations, do not substantially affect the results of the election. So the standard for nullification of elections of Uganda is just extremely ridiculous. In effect, what the court has said, that you can kill a few people, you can arrest a few people, you can deliver voting materials late in some areas, provided that does not affect the result in any substantial way. Now, substantiality, the court should have dealt with that in detail and made an analysis of whether, in determining substantiality, you must have a quantitative or really indeed a qualitative approach to that determination. The court has not done that and simply chosen the easier way to say, one beat a few people, don't mind, as long as it doesn't change the results in any substantial manner.
I see. So, Suleiman, do you agree with those who had said even before the election that it was no point running to the Supreme Court to contest the results of the election?
Without any doubt. Even if the Chief Justice had closed his eyes, since he was a party to the judges who are in 201 and 211, he could as well have uttered the same ruling which they uttered in 201 and 206, because almost everything was the same. There was nothing changed. But what is so shocking and what is so disappointing to Ugandans is the way my brother said down there, the way it is now a practice in Uganda to flout the laws so long as you cannot reach the standard of quantification. Because, for example, the court itself blatantly accepted money was distributed per village, but it goes ahead to just fight. No, money was distributed, but it was just distributed for party officials. Hoys were distributed. No, it was an ongoing process. Guns were all over in an election. No, they are not allowed, but they can be allowed if requested legally. Candidates were intercepted. No, they were intercepted, but it was legally done. State institutions were fused within the incumbent system, within the incumbent party. Yes, the RDC, the police, the Kampala, whatever person and the other officials. No, they were just doing their own official duties. No, phones were blocked. No, it was for security reasons. No, the offices were raided and affidavits were taken away, and all the people who were supposed to swear those affidavits were intimidated. Others were arrested. Others were killed. But no, the petitioner has not had affidavits enough to prove. The state finances were used. No, there was no illegality. The electoral, the voters register was retired. Nobody was disenfranchised, no matter whether one opposition leader called Mao was disenfranchised and so many others. So the electoral commission was incompetent. It was incompetent in 1996. It was incompetent in 2001. It was incompetent in 2006. Still incompetent in 2011. So everything continues like that, but it is just fight, and then they pull away and say, no, you have not proved substantially. The quantity is not enough for you to prove a case. So everything is farcical. That is why Dr. Besigye had said he was not willing to participate in election without electoral reforms. That is why when the citizens, when the civil society went around and collected reforms, they were rejected by the sitting government because they were not interested in allowing a free, fair, and transparent election. They wanted this sham of an election. They have had it. They have had it certified by the Supreme Court, because that is what Museveni has wanted all the 30 years. From 1979, he has wanted to be a president. All his life, he wants to be a president until he dies. So nothing will stop him, and he has had it even this time. It is well certified. The template was laid, and it is clear. It is followed to the letter, and it has been followed precisely. So there's nothing new here which we can get shocked about.
But, Suleiman, what does that do to the legitimacy of the incoming government?
What happens is what has happened in Burundi. The Constitution Court allowed the president to take a third term. What has happened is what happened in Congo Brazzaville. Sungwesu was allowed to take a third term. What happened is what happened in Rwanda. 98% allow him to take over. In the Great Lakes region, it is the same template. Actually, Uganda is the godfather of everybody. He's setting the pace for everybody. What has happened is that we have got two worlds in this dictatorship, in all this dictatorship in the Central African region, in the Eastern Central Africa. We have got two worlds. We have got a world of their own where they feel they are doing the best, and they are right and correct in whatever they are doing using the gun. And then we have got the other world of the ordinary citizens who have got a future, who have got life to look for, who want good hospitals and good roads and etc. For them, as far as the leadership, they are concerned, they are in their own world. They are not worried about what happens in the second world. Now for this second world, for the sharecroppers, for those who are renting them in their own country, which they have personalized, they will see what to do. We don't know. The tension will stay there. As far as elections are concerned, it has done a blow to what you call an election. You will never have a meaningful election in a country like Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, Burundi, until when these current leaders have left.
Nicholas, your take on the legitimacy issue?
Well, there's absolutely no doubt that President Museveni's victory, as confirmed by the courts today in Uganda, does not enjoy as widespread support and approval across this country. Even after the elections were announced on February the 20th, there were no celebrations. There were muted celebrations in very small corners of this country. So President Museveni's victory is a victory that suffers a legitimacy problem with ordinary Ugandans. Who witnessed this election? Who witnessed voter bribery? Who witnessed stuffing of ballot? Of elections? Who witnessed intimidation? And who continue to witness the unlawful house arrest and detention of the leading opposition candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye? So that doesn't give President Museveni legitimacy, and I think he's going to have to work very, very hard to win back the hearts and minds of the people of this country. And he cannot do that by what he's doing in Kampala. is turn Kampala into a military garrison. In all the big seven hills of Kampala have been occupied by the army. In some cases, heavy artillery have been mounted on those hills. I visited one of the hills called the Baha'i Temple here in Kampala. I was surprised to see a surface-to-air missile mounted on a temple compound here in Kampala. So you cannot win over people by the use of excessive force. The streets of Kampala is being patrolled by heavily armed army and intelligence operatives. The airstrip in Kampala is now like a military barracks with small tents of army men. Right before the High Court building in Kampala is full of army men now. It's like a military barracks. So you cannot win people's legitimacy by deploying the forces of the security teams in Kampala. I think it has to work very hard now to begin to win the hearts and minds of the people of this country. And it's going to be difficult. And this is going to place Uganda at a very difficult position because this widespread discontent and contestation of what he alleges as a victory and what has now been stamped by the Supreme Court.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of the ruling of Uganda's Supreme Court on the election, on election petition. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of American Studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the recent election in Uganda, and our panelists are Mr. Nicholas Opio, a Kampala human rights lawyer and political analyst, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Gentlemen, now, today, after the court ruling, the person who was the flag bearer for the FDC, the main opposition party, said Mr. Museveni cannot be declared validly elected by anybody. So, Suleiman, what do you take from that? Because it appears Mr. Museveni is not conceding at all.
Precisely, from his words, he seems not to be conceding. And it's for the sake of it, because he has got evidence. Everything was made to make sure that no free and fair elections are held. Really, there was a big turnout. There was evidence on the ground. The way my colleague has said down there, there were evidence of all malpractices and irregularities. So all were done in broad daylight. The people made a decision. That decision was not allowed to be announced. So I think it has been done so many times. Dr. Besigye feels, I think, this is the last final line. A line has been drawn in the sand. He has drawn the line in the sand. It is as if he feels it cannot be allowed to go any further. The people have to claim their own victory, mm-hmm. according to him.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas, as the court has certified again, the Electoral Commission was incompetent. And there was a clamor for electoral reforms before this election, and the government didn't want it to happen. Are you optimistic there may be electoral reforms now, and to what end?
Well, I don't think that the government of President Museveni is committed to an electoral reform or a comprehensive electoral reform that would usher in free and fair elections in this country. I don't see that happening. I don't think that President Museveni is interested in having reforms that might possibly make him lose his seat in power. So I don't think reforms are going to be undertaken anytime soon. If the experiences of the past are anything to go by, any reform will be last-minute reforms and, for all intents and purposes, minimalist in nature. I don't think that there will be reforms because hundreds and hundreds of pages of observer reports, of court recommendations, of demands by people in this country. People in this country, for example, demanded comprehensive reforms of the election before this last election. And they were ignored by the state. So I don't think there's any political will on the part of the ruling party to undertake comprehensive electoral reforms that will usher in free and fair elections and make it possible for them to lose power. I think their intention is to retain power for as long as they can. They will use legal and non-legal means to ensure that they perpetuate their stay in power. So any hope for electoral reforms is really very remote from where I, you know, from where I see it.
I see. Suleiman, you can feel the anger of the some of the people in the country, in Uganda. And given the, what Mr. Pio has just said, there is very little chance of electoral reforms. So in what direction now does the people go, do? I mean, because don't they lose hope in the electoral electoral process? And then what next?
It's a $1 million question because, as you are saying, there is a legitimacy crisis. There is a moral crisis. There is an ethical crisis. Even if the people were to allow Mr. Museveni to continue, but there is a moral crisis in the country. Greed, lies, fraud, murder, torture, they have become a code of conduct in the country. How do you get national cohesion when you have got such issues, when you don't have values on which you are harnessing the people on? There is outright theft, there is outright corruption, there is outright torture. The way my colleague have said, you hold an opposition leader, you incarcerate him in his own home without any charge, without any law. But for the sake of it, I mean, they have given themselves the license. The other day, you saw in Kasese policemen shooting people during broad daylight. No judicial commission. No, I mean, they have got a license to do what they want. So from now on, the country is moving on. We assume the country is moving on, but it will be a very difficult time. Let's hope the people will not become as violent as in some other countries like in Burundi. But we cannot rule out the possibility because from now you can see people are forcing their way to Dr. Besigye's place. It has now become a sort of a shrine. Everybody is fighting to go there. They are provoking the security institution, and the security institutions are not ready to give down. So really it is a $1 million question. One doesn't know which direction the country will take, but we hope the international community will intervene. It will come in and help somehow using their might. Maybe we can get some direction as what it will have, where the country will move from now.
I see. Nicholas, as our listeners may know, Dr. Besigye's attempts to challenge his incarceration in his home took a different turn when the case file was taken to the high, was recalled by the High Court. And now that he's refusing to concede, do you see him staying incarcerated until the end of the 5-year term of the current seven?
Well, I don't think they can do that. I don't think they can keep him much longer in detention. Sooner or later, something is going to give. I think that the plan is to detain him until President Museveni is sworn in. So I think by about May, he might be released. But here's what I think. The continued detention of Dr. Kizza Besigye is raising the political temperature in the country. Dr. Kizza Besigye's home has been turned into a political mecca of some sort, with everybody trying to make it to go there. Ordinary taxi drivers now call the area where he's staying State House. So it's just going to become a hot political potato that the president will drop at some point, and I think he will do that sooner. As soon as he's sworn in, I think he will do that. But just to supplement the point that my colleague made, that, you know, what next for Uganda? First of all, I think I must applaud the American government for the very first time coming out outrightly, calling President Museveni what he is, a danger to the stability of the region. Yeah. I think that those statements are reflective of the general attitudes, feelings of people in this country. But I think that I need to urge them to go a step further because long-term interest of our development partners is best served by having a legitimate a constitutional and democratic government in Uganda. We have seen that in places where they have not dealt with the question of governance, their interests have been jeopardized by a lot of these kind of things. So the international community must begin to realize who President Museveni is, for what he is, and take proactive steps to ensure that the voices of ordinary Ugandans are respected and that long-term interests of these development partners are served better by a democratic state in Uganda.
I see. Finally, we're running out of time. 1 minute each to each of you, beginning with Suleiman. Do you see the Ugandan people? I can't say the whole, because there's those who supported and voted for Mr. Museveni. But are those aggrieved people, do you think they're going to take it and sit down the 5 years? And even then, even at the end of the 5 years, what next?
It is a very difficult question. As my brother said, the temperatures are rising every day and we don't know how far they will go. For an ordinary man to assault a security man with a gun, then you know that the tempers have gone high. We don't know how many of those courageous people are in the country today. Let's just watch the space. But to add on what my brother said, the Americans and the EU have already slated punishment on Burundi, on Tanzania. Now we call upon them also to come out and do the same to Uganda. At least if the funding of the regime can be reduced, maybe Museveni will come to his senses before we get bloodshed from the population.
Mr. Pio, last word. How do you see the thing ending? Will the people just say, well, what has happened, let's move on?
There's a rising level of civic awareness in Uganda, and Ugandans are beginning to ask hard questions of their leaders. I see the next 5 years being dotted with incidents of civil disobedience, of the people trying to reassert their voices and making their voices heard. It is going to be a difficult time for Uganda in the next 5 years. It's going to be tense. The governance is going to be a difficult thing to accomplish. And I hope that the government in Uganda doesn't resort to the use of violence, to extrajudicial killings, to restriction of civil liberties, and the abuse of human rights.
Before you go, Nicholas, tell me about, we had a report that some people are chaining themselves on posts, lampposts in Kampala this morning. Is that true?
Yeah, young people who are protesting the continued detention of Dr. Kizza Besigye this morning chained themselves on electric poles in the city with padlocks and chains. They were eventually arrested. University students are walking without shoes. What they call Free My Vote campaign. So these kind of initiatives are beginning to become commonplace across the country.
And of course, this is in addition to the, are they weekly prayers or something?
Oh yeah, they are weekly prayers by the FCC party at the different party offices across the country. They have also agreed to wear blue every Friday as a show of silent resistance against what they think was an unfair election and what they think is a continued illegal detention of their leader.
And then the privilege to Besigye's place also is a continuous process from various parts of the country,
yes,
also as a form of resistance.
Yes.
I see. Well, gentlemen, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Nicholas Opiyo, a Kampala human rights lawyer and political analyst, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting
us. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight, as usual, was Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer was the amiable Suleiman Tarawali. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you want to listen to this program again or missed part of it, you can still do so by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to the program again. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simkoga in Washington, wishing you a very fruitful week.